This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. This story is from our episode about obesity. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. 20 years ago, pediatric gastroenterologist Christine Nguyen would rarely see children who had health issues related to obesity. Now, it's a big driver of issues among her patients, like fatty liver disease, where excess fat is stored in the liver. And many of these patients also have other problems, like type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, and mental health concerns. This year, the American Academy of Pediatrics released new guidelines for managing childhood obesity. The guidelines recommend at least 26 hours of intensive family-based health visits within a year. That can be a lofty goal. It's a big time commitment for families and a challenge for a health system that's already overloaded. Christine wondered, how could obesity be addressed earlier, before all these problems emerge? And how are other clinicians dealing with this?
Most parents are familiar with kids' growth charts. In the clinic, parents love it when I invite them to peek over my shoulder to take a look. They track their kids' height and weight with the same attention as checking a report card. And when a child is underweight, there's almost universal concern. But since I finished medical school in 2000, it's become much more common for kids to be overweight. 1 in 5 children in the United States is obese. That's 15 million children. What's more, over 4.5 million children have severe obesity. This subset of heavier children couldn't be plotted on the old growth charts. So last year, the CDC made extended growth charts to monitor these kids.
And the main concern is that these children are developing type 2 diabetes and hypertension and metabolic syndrome at a very young age.
That's Dr. Eloisa Junquera, a pediatrician at Natividad Hospital in Salinas, California. It's the major public hospital in Monterey County.
Natividad serves a largely Hispanic community. I would say over 90% of our patients are Hispanic. And of those, the vast majority are families of farm workers.
During the COVID-19 pandemic, childhood obesity in California increased from 19% to 26%. The statistics are worse for children of color. And in Monterey County, where 2/3 of the population is Latino, the rate of childhood obesity is even higher. Clinicians like Eloisa see patients before they get referred to specialists like me. They see these patients first, and they see them the most often. How does she tackle these issues?
Have you seen a change in the percentage of or the number of children you've seen with type 2 diabetes or prediabetes?
Definitely. Very clear change. I would say in the last 10 years, it's been astonishing.
Diabetes is just one problem. Children with severe obesity have higher rates of asthma, high blood pressure, and kidney problems. They can't get rest because of sleep apnea. They also get arthritis and liver disease. Eloisa has seen all of this. These chronic health conditions pile on the county's already overburdened primary care system. So when the American Academy of Pediatrics recommended kids with obesity get at least 26 one-hour appointments for what it calls intensive health behavior and lifestyle treatment, she was glad someone finally sounded the alarm. But the expectations also collide with reality.
In a primary care visit setting, you have 20 minutes from beginning to end with a patient. That includes pre-charting, seeing the patient, and closing the chart. So you can't really explore any diet and food issues within that time frame. I think even if they hired 50% more providers, that would still not be enough.
Eloisa says she doesn't have the training to prescribe weight loss medications, another intervention the new guidelines suggested. Anyway, she thinks medications, some of which have to be taken indefinitely, are jumping basic steps. Steps like improving access to nutritious foods or making it safe and appealing to stay physically active.
More medicalization of more issues that are going to be treated with pharmaceuticals.
Plus, for her patients who truly need medications or even surgery, the wait list to see specialists with expertise can be months. Then families need to get to these appointments. and they're usually far from home. Students would have to miss school, and parents would miss work.
In our population, they work from April to November. So trying to get those families to miss days of work to come to the clinic for problems that they don't see as a problem, you are setting yourself up for failure. Because if they miss so many days of work, they get put at the end of the line and they're not going to be called to work again.
Eloisa knows success means designing visits to fit working families' lives. To spend more time with more patients, she wants to restart longer group visits, something she did before the pandemic.
I set up group visits once a week where we would meet with 8 to 10 families and we would talk about food choices, reading labels, portion sizes. We did it in Spanish. I tried to do most of it in the winter when the parents would come. So you have time. You have time for questions and answers. You have time for slides. You have time for hands-on experiences like having the children measure the sugar that goes into each drink.
Eloisa also wants to improve nutrition. She says limited access to healthy foods is a driver of pediatric obesity in the county. It's a paradox in this place that's known as the salad bowl of America. The Salinas Valley produces 70% of the nation's lettuce crops. But the farmers who work here often don't get much of the bounty.
These are family-oriented, hard-working people. They put the food in our plates, and I don't think they get enough recognition for that.
About two-thirds of farm workers in Salinas and the surrounding county are food insecure. Because families juggle paying for rent, utilities, gas, and childcare, when it's time to buy food, they often scrimp.
It's a lot cheaper to buy an extra large pizza for a family of five than buying fruits and vegetables for a family of five.
To encourage her families to buy more fruits and vegetables, Eloisa writes Fresh RX prescriptions. It's a food as medicine program funded by Natividad Hospital and redeemable at participating farmers markets. Any child who is overweight is eligible to get a prescription. As it happens, there's a farmer's market right outside her clinic. Everyone's Harvest Market is in the parking lot of Natividad Medical Center. Albus Claribel Lopez describes the produce piled high in her stand.
Zanahoria, alcachofa, cebolla, cilantro.
She and her husband, former field workers, now run their own farm. Albus proudly sells her produce to customers who often work in the ag industry themselves. She wants to change how her community eats.
I've always eaten healthy because I grew up on a ranch. But here in the city, it was a little more difficult for me to find things.
Because her son developed type 1 diabetes at 8 years old, she's careful about what he eats. She says unhealthy foods are everywhere, even in the school meals that are free to all students.
My concern about the school food is that they have a lot of bread, and milk with sugar.
She's right. When I check the school menus where I live, there's lots of starch and added sugar. Breakfast includes sugary cereals. For lunch, how about popcorn chicken with a mashed potato bowl? The second ingredient in the fat-free chocolate milk is sugar. For my own patients with fatty liver, that's not okay. Albus knows that wanting healthy food is one thing, but affording it is another. So she often nudges her customers to visit the mesitas, the little tables where people can sign up for programs that help low-income residents buy fresh food. To see what else community health centers can do, I drive about an hour from Salinas to San Jose. I stop at the Indian Health Center of Santa Clara Valley. Working with the local food bank, the center has a regular farmers market where they give away fresh food. And they've got a free fitness center.
Hi, my name is Marissa Hemstreet. I'm from the Canyoncito Band of Navajos.
Marissa is the fitness coordinator for the center.
And I'm happy to say I started with them as a patient first and then started as an employee about a year after that. We have a treadmill, we have an elliptical, we have two different recumbent bikes, and we have a rower. We do personal training and just folks come in and have the gym to use.
Kids use the gym free with a doctor's referral. There are also free camps and kid-friendly classes.
Now one arm's going to go forward, the other arm's going to go back. Ready? Go.
When kids and parents come to Marissa, there's often a lot of shame.
We've had children come in here and tell us, like, hey, like, I want to come work with you because I'm fat. And for some folks, like, they want to cry when they hear the word fat, because they're like, fat means bad. Fat means ugly. Fat means disgusting. When in reality, fat is just a substance.
Marissa encourages kids and their families to reframe this loaded word. It's because she understands weight stigma.
I'm not super, like, cut. I don't have, like, super defined muscles, but I'm able to move my body comfortably and efficiently. And some folks, they'll say, oh, you don't look like this, or you don't look like that. Are you sure? Are you even certified?
Even some doctors have doubted her.
Have you been ever made to feel like self-conscious about your body?
Oh, I want to say 100%. Because of body mass index scales, I'm over my BMI for my height.
The BMI, or body mass index, is a quick and dirty way to calculate a person's risk for obesity. But it's got problems. At the same weight relative to their height, some people can be healthy and others not. It depends on a lot of other factors, including gender, age, race or ethnicity, and physical activity.
So that's why with children, I also like to remind parents that, you know, BMI scales, they're not the end-all be-all to assessing whether or not you're a healthy person, whether you're a child or an adult.
Marissa doesn't dwell on a numerical weight, and she's careful with her language.
We do check weight, but for the kids, I only try to check weight maybe once every 2 weeks, because I don't like them to see the number and either be discouraged by it. And after each reading, I don't tell them whether I feel like, oh, this is an improvement, or you've lost weight, good job. I just say thank you. You know, thank you for, you know, being vulnerable and standing on a scale.
When she gets a new kid referred to her for fitness training, she starts by addressing the family unit, not just the child.
Children, they don't just listen. They, you know, they follow by example. So if a parent is looking to, you know, change the lifestyle of their child, that they also have to get involved and they also have to move.
Marissa's ultimate goal is making a positive change in kids' overall well-being.
It's not so much the weight. It might be, you know, the way the kid feels. If they're a little bit less lethargic, that's a win. If they feel like they can breathe normally when they're playing with their friends, that's a win. Learning that all of our wins for our kids is not weight-oriented. It can be other things, like improving their life.
That story was reported by pediatrician Christine Nguyen and produced with support from the USC Annenberg Center for Health Journalism.